When we view lifelike images of trees, it calms us, helps us focus and communicate. So I thought, well, why isn't this being used in schools? And that's when I headed off to, you know, create a prototype. So we put in a ceiling in a wellness room at a school. The day after we put the ceiling in, they had this fifth grader has an emotional meltdown. And they brought her into under the ceiling, and it calmed her instantly. Instantly. Well, they watched this phenomenon happen for several weeks, and they called me up and said, hey, this really works.
Hello and welcome to the Conspiracy of Goodness podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Linda Ulrich, and welcome to this wonderful journey into what's right with the world. We're talking to people all over the planet who are doing extraordinary things, large and small, who are part of this amazing wave of goodness and progress that we're just not hearing enough of in mainstream media. On this podcast, we're going to interview a wonderful guest today, Ernesto Rodriguez. Ernesto is the founder of two companies. One is called Serene View, a company that has been bringing nature imagery in the form of patient bedside curtains in over 3,500 hospitals. And he has a nonprofit called Nature in the Classroom, where he's creating the most amazing ceilings in classrooms all over the United States and beyond. So we're gonna find out a lot more about those two adventures. Ernesto has been discovered. He's had a CBS piece done on him, and he's had his work in the Smithsonian and so forth. So I'm lucky to get an interview with Ernesto. And I am so delighted to share his story, because it really demonstrates something for all of us about how we can develop different parts of our life journey, different expertise, and then one day it makes sense to bring it all together. I hope that Ernesto and I will share kind of this story and this journey and all his insights, and you might be inspired to look at your own life path and see where there's something that you are uniquely built to contribute. So welcome, Ernie Rodriguez.
Thank you so much, Dr. Linda, for having me on. It really, really is an honor to join your roster of people that you've interviewed.
Well, some incredible folks. I know. We're having such a great time on the Conspiracy of Goodness podcast. I've interviewed, next week I'm interviewing an astronaut, and I've interviewed a lovely young 18-year-old I met on a park bench once. I'm interviewing folks all over the planet like you who just have this see a problem and solve it impulse. And I think that's one of the most beautiful things about what's going on in our times. Even though you'd never know it on the news, I think there are millions of people like you who
there
just
took
time to really see all the things that they were good at and they were passionate about, and then found a way to bring it all together.
Yeah, the most difficult thing with venturing out into any solution is that typically there aren't reference points for it. So the audience that it goes to, just a handful of people are going to get what you're doing. And it takes time for that audience to grow. So you have to have the willpower and the persistence and brush it off in this and to, you know, keep, because when you know something is right, you just have to keep doing it.
Thanks for starting us off right there, because the thing that I was going to mention to people is that, you know, this episode is all about what happens when you sort of discover what you're uniquely built to contribute, and then you're unable to stop doing it. I think I asked you the other day if you were ever going to retire, and your answer was?
10 years after I've croaked.
Yeah. The first moments of our very first phone call, I was like, I'm in with this guy. He is just my favorite person today. I mean, you have such an effervescence and such a passion for what you're doing right now. Let's start off right at the top of this interview. Take us down a little bit of your history of how you got here. But first, tell us about the hospital curtain project and then the Nature in the Classroom project. Two very cool things.
I've always hated hospitals. They are just cold, stark, scary places. And they don't have to be. Hospitals at the turn of the 20th century were built with views to the environment, where people could be sit outside and recover. But the Industrial Revolution closed them up, which is what we have now. It's just white walls everywhere. It's just like, and I realize they do that for the sake of things being clean, looking clean. However, there is 40 plus years of research that shows that when we view nature imagery, it calms us and it we require less pain medication and shorter hospital stays. Dr. Roger Ulrich, which I understand is no relation, was the founding researcher in this area. And he found out that when people had views out windows to greenery, this phenomenon happened. And what it is the brain secretes serotonin and calms you down. So he showed people pictures of nature, and the same thing happened. So I went to the Redwoods to go do a photo shoot after visiting a friend in a hospital. I was sitting there in this little clearing waiting for the light to come between the trees and thinking about a friend of mine I just visited. And I felt so calm in the forest. I thought, you know, usually you think the opposite. You feel nervous being in the forest. And, you know, I didn't. I felt just surrounded by this serenity. And I thought, well, why can't hospitals feel this way? And then I come back and I run across Dr. Roger Ulrich's work. And I thought, well, my word, this need, I mean, if the patient has this surrounding him, that's going to be the answer. And so it's funny, Dr. Linda, when you take off and you're doing the right thing, it's like the universe responds and helps you. Everybody that I called, I wanted to print on fabric. Nobody knew how to do it. So I thought, you know what? And this was at the tail end of all the casinos that were being built in Las Vegas. So that I'm going to go to Vegas. Somebody there, there'll be some expert that will know how to do this. It took me knocking on three doors before I found somebody who goes, come on in, we can do that. And he built a prototype for me. So, I mean, talk to so-and-so, talk to so-and-so, talk to so-and-so. It's just like, and once I had the prototype done, then I could bring it back and shoot because I didn't know anything about fabric and printing on it. And so once I had that, I was able to find somebody locally that could print them for me. And that's how we got started.
And you even, you have a great VA story.
The VA, which we were doing curtains for, starts with us and says, oh, you know, he says, we want your curtains. He goes, we want patriotic imagery. And he says, we want tanks and we want things exploding. And look, there's 40 plus years of research behind what we're doing. And nature imagery will calm your patients down. So the curtain goes around the bed. He said, oh, well, okay. I said, how about we go do the national parks? And so they said, oh, that's a great idea. So we took off for it was over 3 weeks that we went to photograph imagery in the parks.
And then they got it once they saw it?
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. And we're in a bunch of VAs. I've lost count of how many.
Oh, really?
What was funny is that a friend that moved back here to town was at a VA in Missouri, and they put him in a room, and they opened up the curtain, and it's Catalina Island where wow, you know, where I live, and he couldn't believe it was Catalina. So he mentioned to him once I saw him here, he says, "You know, I believe this, but you know, I was in, and he didn't know that I was doing this. He didn't know they were my curtains,
right?
And you know, he really went on to praise how calm it made him feel.
Mm-hmm. I guess now we've got to really know a little bit about your story. You come from this amazing art background as a child. Then you did a world of psychology. Will you tell the story? How these three parts of your life evolved?
I grew up in Cuba. My grandfather was a renowned muralist that worked with the Cuban Railroad. He did railroad stations. And so I grew up messing with brushes and making a mess and just enjoying it. And my father was a welder, and my mother owned a service station. So I had the mechanical end of things and the art end of things. And so we left Cuba on vacation in October of 1962. And then unbeknownst to us, the Cuban Missile Crisis happened, and we couldn't go back. We'd come to visit my dad's brother, who was in Chicago. And so here we were, we stuck, we couldn't go back. So what we wound up doing was, when our visas expired, we went to Canada. And my uncle claimed us as family and refugees, and we came back in under refugee status. political.
So refugees. Serendipity. I mean, this was just, you went on vacation just days before the Cuban Missile Crisis.
Yeah.
So it's just an act of serendipity that you even wound up here, which all through Ernesto's story is the serendipity angle too. We've always got to leave room for that. So,
and that's the great work because serendipity is always around us. You just have to be open to it and put yourself out there. And like I said, the universe responds. So, grew up basically, learned to speak English in Chicago. And we got to the point in 1968 that had a blizzard that immobilized Chicago for 3 days. And my folks looked at each other going, what are we doing here? And my mother had a cousin in Long Beach, California, and we moved to Long Beach. And it's just like, I don't even like snow in pictures. So that's so growing up there just changed my whole attitude. I guess attitude's not the right word, but I don't like wearing coats. I don't like, 69 degrees is freezing to me.
I know. I live in Vermont. Most of my listeners know I've lived in Vermont. 6 degrees last night. So Long Beach, California, in those days, there's probably still a lot of natural beauty there. It wasn't one big city.
Yeah, it wasn't. It's not a huge city. A lot of parks. Went through high school there, and then went to San Diego State for my undergrad and graduate degrees. San Diego at that time was really quite still a rural feeling to San Diego. I was a marriage family counselor and got the coveted county job doing suicide intervention. Coveted county job. Where people work a lifetime at it. And I was sitting in the conference room working on reports. And one of the other psychologists comes in and he starts just yelling, where's so-and-so? He goes, he's parked in my spot for the last time. And my whole life flashed before me. It's like, do I want to be working for the county of San Diego my whole life so I can have my name on a parking spot? Is that it? And I went to San Diego State to go do something with my license. And I see this, just had a poster up, this principal from a school in Medellin, Colombia, was looking for a psychologist to come work down there. And I was in shorts and a t-shirt, and I go in and knock on his door, and the person he was interviewing that hour didn't show up. And he goes, come on in, and we just start talking. And we clicked. About a week later, I get a call, and he said, Ernie, you're going to come down and work with us. I said, Ron, you send me a ticket, and I'll see you soon. So people couldn't believe I quit the county job, and off I went to South America and met my wife-to-be then. She's an American from Downey, California. Her classroom was next to my office, and we just became friends and married 43 years now and still laughing.
So you had the great education and then experience in the world of psychology. And then when did what's this photography transition?
Well, we came back from South America, and just the overseas school circuit is phenomenal. It's like, where in the world do you want to go, basically? And they have conferences, several conferences every year where they're always looking for teachers. And so we went off to Saudi Arabia, and this was 1982, and was enjoying the aspect of living overseas and traveling, because they would give you almost 3 months off and a round the world ticket and just go wherever you want. So it was that balance. I really enjoy education, working with kids, and traveling. So then I meet Jim Dorn, who was on the west coast of Saudi Arabia, and he's a Nat Geo photographer, and he was so kind to mentor. Not only did he mentor my photographic skills, but all the love that I have for art that my grandfather instilled in me, it all came gushing out. When we left Cuba, that was all suppressed, just the whole nature of such a transition. So, but he Jim brought all that back out, and we still stay in touch.
All right. So, so then you start your photography business, and something must have happened either serendipitously or that triggered it. Was it actually this whole thing then unfolded? You had a great life in professional photography, And then you had this hospital experience and it was glaringly apparent that somebody had to do something about this problem. And then there must have been something that happened that made you think about classrooms.
I started being a park ranger on Catalina Island. And I noticed the research that I started getting being a park ranger came from the North American Association of Environmental Educators. And they started showing research that when we view trees, it calms us, helps us focus and communicate. So I delved into the research that came out of the University of Michigan. It's called attention restoration theory. University of Michigan has all kinds of avenues that you can pursue that shows the outcome of this research. This is in the 80s. This led to the research being verified by universities all around the country. When we view lifelike images of trees, it calms us, helps us focus and communicate. And I thought, why isn't this in schools? And it led me to create a prototype. And it took me three principals at the school here before one of them would allow me to put a ceiling in. Almost 3 years. And once I put it in, it's guess who gets it right away? The kids do. They haven't had the social blanket put over them that they're still going to respond with what we're biologically open to respond to. So once I did that, it got things going.
Can you describe when you say this? Most of us can probably have a visual instantly about the curtains that go around our rooms if you've had a visit to the ER recently or urgent care. And so I can instantly visualize those curtains having beautiful scenes of nature. And, 3,500 hospitals, this is big. Describe to us when you're talking about when you say we did a ceiling.
Imagine walking into an orchard, a group of trees. You look up and the sun is coming through it and you're seeing the sun in between the leaves. And you're just surrounded as you look up by this leaves that basically provide this comfort. And when you look at that pattern in the leaves, that's where our brain is designed to do. It will calm us because it helps us assess the environment around us. So and that's what the University of Michigan found out, that when we view trees, it calms us, helps us focus and communicate. So I thought, well, why isn't this being used in schools? And that's when I headed off to, created a prototype. And 3 years, three principals, and almost 3 years later, they let me put it in a school here where I live. And it let us take off. It was difficult to move it on because it when you're first starting something, that people just don't have any reference points and they don't have no idea. They're afraid that if something goes wrong, they're going to get the blame for it. So people refuse to try things for that reason.
Mm-hmm. But you tell stories of some great comments from kids. Share some of those comments.
My favorite comment has come from a kindergartner who summed up the science. And she was sitting on the floor. And the teacher said, whenever you're here, you've got to come in. The kids want to meet you. So I go in. And I made the mistake of sitting down on the floor with them, because once I was on the floor, it's like, you're one of us. And so this little girl sitting right in front of me, and I said, what do you like about having a tree in your ceiling? And she was sitting on her calves, and she straightens up, and she flicks her hair back, and she looks at me, and she goes, it calms me up. And I wish I would have had that on video. But basically, that's what teachers say. The kids settle down quicker coming into class. They've got an extra 10 minutes a day to teach with kids paying attention. So when you look at that over a school year, it's about an extra 30 hours of instruction. So that's significant. We've yet to see where that goes. But the biggest thing that's happening now is the pandemic hit, and then it's left students with about 25% of students with anxiety, and the trees calm kids instantly. How schools have responded, they've put in these wellness rooms where kids can go just get out of the classroom if they're having an anxiety attack and go, because they districts don't have any money to hire extra counselors or extra psychologists. They put these wellness rooms in instead. And so the teachers tell kids to go in there and just, you know, come back when you're ready. So we put in a ceiling in a wellness room at a school out in Corona, California. And they hadn't finished the room yet. The day after we put the ceiling in, they had this fifth grader has an emotional meltdown. And they brought her into under the ceiling and it calmed her instantly. Instantly. Well, they watched this phenomenon happen for several weeks and they called me up and said, "Hey, this really works." I said, "Well, it's 40 years of science. How about that?" And we wound up doing all their classrooms that didn't have windows. And the vice principal said, it's been a heaven-sent gift because it keeps the kids calm.
This is something you mentioned to me in our pre-call that I found pretty interesting. New schools or even old schools with certain other concerns are being built or being created with no windows anymore for security.
Due to the violence, they're building schools without windows, just a little thing up at the top, a little bit of air in.
Never thought of that. And just to be clear, Ernie's ceilings in these classrooms feel like all of us have had that moment where we're laying in an orchard or even laying in a grove of pine trees or just looking up through a tree's limbs to the sky. And then you have all this science.
It's a no-brainer. But again, people don't get it until they actually see it. This principal that we were putting a ceiling in there in her school, you know, she comes in and her jaw just dropped and she goes, "This is what you meant." And she proceeds to lay down on the floor and look up at the ceiling and enjoy it. So
this is the thing. I mean, this is what I love about this concept. And when I discovered your work, I was like, I have to talk to this guy. Because when I saw images of this, it seems like the least we can do.
Yeah, and they're really cheap.
Obvious. Yes. And you're doing this as a nonprofit, so I'm assuming you've got, you know, fundraising ideas for people, or you have people go out and find a funder, a local business or philanthropist. Yeah,
it's funny you say we're getting ready to do a fundraiser with two comedians. And one of them is my son's a comedian. Okay. And his really good friend, Dude Dad, is a comedian. And this guy, I mean, he's so prolific. So we're going to do that next month.
Well, I hope this episode helps spread the word on this because, you know, creating a fundraiser for your kid's classroom is something anybody can do. I mean, people do it all the time for this, that, or the other. But you've got so much to offer and add to people's lives here if we just consider this a priority. And for so many reasons, we have to. So let's take a break. And then when we come back, we're going to talk to Ernesto more about all this wonder that he's created with these two concepts that help us in our lives feel better about things. And of course, we're going to make better choices. So let's take a break. And when we come back, we'll talk about much, much more.
You know how the constant negative noise in our digital lives feels like it's reaching a boiling point? Now, many of us have tuned out the news and social media almost entirely. Well, it doesn't have to be that way. There are newsworthy stories about amazing progress, innovation, leaps in human potential, and wonders in the natural world, and they're just not reaching the top of our feeds. We can have access to this, but none of us has the time or maybe even the emotional stamina to search through all the doom and gloom news to find what's right with the world. Okay, enter the Goodness Exchange. There, we are giving instant access to positive news for curious people. Did you hear about the recent Harvard study that found that exposure to just 4 minutes of good news can make you 32% less anxious and 18% more optimistic? Well, I don't know about you, but I need those kind of numbers in my life. So if you want to live with more joy and way less fear, it's really simple. First, you join us at the Goodness Exchange. Everyone around the world has the opportunity to access this kind of content. And we've promised no politics for about a decade, so you're safe from all that distraction as well. Second, you allow this new more positive, balanced worldview to put a spring in your step again. It can change the way you react to your kids, your coworkers, everybody you come in contact with. And the stories we write about can make you the idea person in your circles. These challenging times call for us to wake up and take control of our perspective. The people who use the Goodness Exchange have the ability to react to the harshness of the world much different because they know way more about what's right with the world. And that's a resource. So subscribe to the Goodness Exchange, our YouTube channel and the podcast, and use this content to live a more expansive worldview. It is still an amazing world out there, and you can be a part of it. Welcome to the Conspiracy of Goodness.
Okay, we're back. And we want to talk to Ernie about the kinds of the parts of this equation that inspire him. I'm sure it's the kids. You've probably got kids who enjoy this as part of their school life every single day. And you're opening up new things that they think about for themselves. You told me that one little girl said, "This makes me want to help nature."
Yeah, this was a kindergartner. And I've heard this quite a bit from, you know, the younger kids where they haven't had the dust of urban living cover their brain yet. So our raw wiring to the environment, that's what you're tapping into. And kids claim that, hey, this makes me want to help the environment, which is music to my ears because we provide resources for teachers that help them do environmental classes that, you know, will help that along. So it's part of the resources section. It's all free stuff the teachers can use. And it's as well as mindfulness exercises.
Well, I was going to say, you know, there's probably been a greater need or a greater perceived need. Maybe the need was always there, but now we perceive the need more in schools. You know, there's part of your story also that that impressed me because, you know, you seem to have seen a need and then just launched into it. And then, as you say, it almost is like the universe responds. And I don't mean that in a spooky way, but just that, you know, your openness to answers, to possible answers everywhere, probably factored into this journey as well, don't you think?
You do. You've got to be open and you got to be looking over your shoulder to say, you know, what you don't want to leave that behind. And people come along, and it doesn't mean you don't take wrong turns, and we certainly made some wrong turns doing this stuff, and there's some low points, but it seems like when you're at your lowest, the little gleam of light says, come this way.
Yes, and you have that story about the bus ride to Honduras, was it? Tell that story, because that's one of those little voice moments.
And that's a good example for what you're talking about and how you get to a low point and the universe steps in an unexpected, I didn't see that coming kind of way.
Yeah, tell that story. That's a great story.
But I finished my undergrad, and a friend of my dad's was delivering a bus to Honduras, Tegucigalpa. And he says, yeah, I need help with this. If you can help me, it'd be great. So I said, sure. So I drove down with him. And I thought, I mean, I didn't have any money then. I just finished my undergrad. And I thought, oh, you know, I'll hitchhike back. No, it shouldn't be any big deal. Well, you know, we spent the time visiting with the people that he was there with. And it was time for me to come back. And they dropped me off at a truck stop outside of Tegucigalpa. And it's like, oh my word, what all into the reality of like, you're here, you got to get home, what are you going to do? And I'm sitting there just going, what have I done? And I'm next to this little shack that served food. And I'm sitting on the curb on the street side, actually sitting on the curb. And I'm eating there, and the look on my face had to have been, you know, like, what am I going to do now? And this guy pulls up in a truck, and he's delivering soda pop cans and other stuff to the shack. And he's wheeling his cart past me, and he stops right in front of me, and he looks at me and goes, no le tenga miedo a la gente. Don't be afraid of people. I mean, this came out of just like, and it's what I needed. And I didn't think anything of it. It's what I needed to hear right then and there. It's like, oh, yeah. And I got up and I went over to this truck driver that was filling up his truck. I said, hey, you going to Guatemala? He goes, jump in. and off I went. And that was really my first clue about the universe stepping in to help you when you most need it. It just does.
Mm-hmm. It just does. You know, one of the things that my guests have heard me say on here is that I used to be a very impatient person and always wanting to use my time in the best way. And when I would get into a conversation that I knew was going to be boring, I shouldn't have taken that Zoom or that call or whatever. I used to either rush through it or whatever, like we all do when we think we're stuck in some conversation that's going to be of no use. And I tell you, this journey that I've been on, I learned about 10, 11, 12 years ago that every conversation has something in it that I need to hear. No matter if it's with a toll booth operator. It could be a 13-year-old nephew who I can't get to look away from his phone. But if I engage and deeply listen, I will hear the next message as well. And yeah. Again, not spooky, just I think it's a factor of how our minds work when we're working in our passion. When we're working on something that we care about deeply and we're charging forward and trying to make every day count. You've got a great story like that about meeting Nelson Shanks at just the right time.
Yeah. I mean, it's funny with, and that's happened with every step of getting to where I'm at now is somebody with mentorship capabilities just comes out of nowhere. And Nelson Shanks passed away probably, six, seven, maybe 10 years ago. But he was the world's most renowned portrait painter. He painted portraits of kings, queens, presidents for 40, 50 years. And they're all, if you're ever in the Smithsonian, it's in the, that's where they're at. And here he is on Catalina painting a horse.
So you live on Catalina Island.
I live on Catalina Island, yeah. So right. So I get this call, says, hi, Ernie. He goes, I've got Nelson Shanks here. He's doing a portrait of my horse. And he paints from photographs, and none of his pictures are coming out. And he says, do you think you could help him? I said, and I didn't know who this guy was. And I said, yeah, sure. So I, Googled away, and it's just like, oh my word. I mean, this guy is just there's nobody. He is the top of his field. His paintings are just so beautiful. And so I go up to meet him to pick him up that morning because we would shoot the sunrise and sunset and sometimes during midday. And I go up to meet him, and I've got sunglasses on, and I'm so nervous. And I put my hand out, and expletive comes out of his mouth, take those sunglasses off. You can't see the light. Yeah. And that was my first lesson about how painters, and we spent the next, 2.5, maybe 3 weeks, where he would explain in detail the interaction of light, dark, and color that he wanted. And what I learned from him was, and this takes it's a lifelong journey to learn this duality, is Mother Nature's light creates color. But when you're looking at a painting, color creates the feeling of light. And it's like, and it changed the way I look through a camera. Now people say, your pictures look like paintings. I said, yeah. Take those sunglasses off. You can't see the light.
Yes. You might have just taken that as an insult or a harsh guy, but you took it like I needed to hear that and apply it all over the place.
I just laughed and he started laughing. We became good friends. I'd see him every time I was coming through New York because he taught it, I think, at Columbia. And we'd get together for dinner. I mean, he was just a gem of a human being.
And the other thing I noticed in our pre-call was that you have this way of persisting, just kind of being in this mindset. When you hear no, I think you're hearing no for now.
Yeah.
I love this concept of keeping going forward with something that you know in your heart can change somebody else's life and knowing that no could be just no for now. Tell us that great story about the Telemundo interview. and the school that you were trying to get?
It starts with my mother, and who told me when I was little that tú eres loco de idea fija. You know, you're just one. I can only entertain one thought.
One track mind is what we say.
Yeah, that's it. It was great because I managed to reach out to Telemundo, and they said, sure, we'll do a story. It's in East LA. All the kids speak Spanish. So Telemundo comes in, and, you know, there's all kinds of restrictions on media coming into a school and what has to happen in order for that to take place.
And you were in a school where you'd already put in one ceiling?
We put in eight ceilings in there.
Okay, and then and Telemundo was coming to do a story on this.
Right. We put one in the library where all the kids do it. And we tried to put it strategically in classrooms that as kids shift around, even though it's an elementary school, kids still change classrooms, you know, where most of the kids would experience the tree ceiling. But the guy who was the district manager for East L.A., comes in and to witness the taping. And he comes up to me afterwards. He says, I want these in my district. I said, sure. I said, you know, well, let's talk to facilities people. And this is where just because it's clear to you or one other person, most people aren't going to get this. And so we have a meeting with the facilities people. And one guy says, he goes, let me be clear. He goes, I don't want to do this. He goes, do you have any research that shows that looking at trees harms the brain? And it's like, it's just like, what? And finally, so the administrator steps in. He goes, hey, he says, I'm in charge here. This is brand new. He says, we're going to do it. So that's how the meeting ended. And I had this whole presentation that just went nowhere, really. It didn't matter. I was showing him the science or, you know.
But that is what, I mean, you know, you can only imagine. No one was asking for good news in 2014 when I started the Goodness Exchange. No one. And there was the good news websites that were on the internet were full of ads and a lot of politics. And of course, none of us wanted that then any more than we want it now, but it was really grating, the amount of ads and politics and good news sites in 2014 when I started the Goodness Exchange was overwhelming. And no one was asking for this. And that is another thing I've found with the innovators like you who I interview. You know, Steve Jobs was very famous for saying that no one was asking for the iPhone. And sometimes it just takes the unique alchemy in an innovator like you to say, hey, I know this. You had your very professional academic, you know, psychology background. And then you had this artistic gift. And then I think that your time on Catalina Island probably started to gel some of these concepts too, right?
It is. And the interesting thing about this place is that it's a crossroads for people. Mm-hmm. You meet all kinds of folks that come through that have expertise that you connect with.
Yeah. So I'm going to encourage people after this interview to start really, you know, like you said, looking over your shoulder, looking at in places in your closet, in your life's closet. Yeah. Some of those bottom drawers on things that you were really passionate as a kid, because you did actually say to me in our pre-call that what happened after the Cuban Missile Crisis sort of drove the art out of you.
Yeah. You know, just having to learn a new language and living in a place like Chicago just squelched it.
Yeah. So, but we all know what we loved when we were 11.
Yes.
We all, yes. It's still there. That whole beauty, that whole sense of wonder and beauty is still there. And then you had these other really incredible deep dives into rigorous intention with work that I think also informed this part of your life. And that's another thing I wanted to make sure people understood out of this interview was when I met you, I recognized someone who has gone on a journey from thing to thing, never thinking you'd wind up exactly here. Is that correct?
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. That's a great way to put it. You just know what you're doing is right, and how you get it out there is a mystery. So But yes. We're getting ready to do schools in New York, which I'm super excited about, which
Tell
is
us about
huge.
That. Tell us it's about huge. That.
That came through, somebody called me out of the blue and said, hey, I ran across your website and I'd like to rep your product out here on the East Coast. He lives in Boston. And he said, I just got a call from somebody in New York that he knows that you know, it was only, so it's, it, once you get it out there and you start rolling, it's that snowball rolling down a hill that starts to grow.
Yeah. Here's something you mentioned the other day, which I thought we should at least chit-chat about a bit before we wrap up. You said something about when you were about the importance of nature in our lives and the importance of experimentation and having some running room in all directions in our imagination. And you said when you were raising your own kids, if they were bored, you had some special way of addressing this childhood boredom with your own kids. I thought that was kind of interesting.
Well, you know, my kid, and they only said it to me twice. They were both, I think Jenna was a second grader and David might've been a fifth grader. You know, I'm bored. And I said, you know, you have a personal problem. There's all this stuff you can go outside and play, do whatever it is you want, but it's up to you. Only you can figure out what it is you love to do and do it. And they're both doing what they love to do right now as adults, which is pretty cool. It's cool to see them flourishing.
Yeah. And I think what that, that particular topic reminded in me is that back, I would imagine when your kids were little, could they just hop on the internet and binge watch Netflix for 6 hours if they're bored?
Yeah.
Could they?
You know, kids are spending an average of 8 hours in front of their media phones.
Yes.
That's an issue.
Yeah. So I think it's up to parents to have some version of that response when they see their kids being so bored that they're just scrolling through social media or binge watching something. Like, I think we have to police ourselves a bit better these days.
Yeah. Because it's funny. I just read an article this morning that kids, what was it, like 60, 70% of kids say, hey, we feel fine without our phones. You know, it's like we feel okay without having our phones with us. So.
And yet you go to a restaurant and you see moms and dads handing the phones to the 3-year-old.
Five people at the table all on their own phone.
Yes. Yeah. Oh, that makes me crazy. And the reason why it makes me crazy is because there is so much wonder to be had in conversations with somebody older or younger than you. There's so much wonder to be had in taking a walk instead. How about take a walk at night and see what you see with a headlamp instead of binging Netflix for 4 hours? You know, so thank you, Ernie, for being one of those innovators in the world that just saw a problem and knew what you were uniquely built to contribute to that. Thanks for hanging in there. I'm sure you're changing the lives of thousands, maybe hundreds of thousands of children as this idea keeps getting bigger and bigger in the world to have these ceilings, these natural ceilings.
I'm proud to say that the curtains have helped millions of people.
I was just going to say, and the curtains, that's something I've had a rough 3 years of trips in the emergency room with myself, broken leg, broken arm, my husband, all this stuff. And you're absolutely right. When I learned about your work and I thought how much better shape our attitudes would have been and our hearts had we been sitting in a room with the kind of work that you're doing, check out Ernie's website and you're going to see something that you wish you had access to. And maybe you can start some movement of your own to get access to this sort of thing in your own community. So Ernie, as we wrap up here, you know, if this interview had just been 3 minutes, or when you just listen to the negative noise on the news and you think to yourself, oh, I really wish people knew. What do you really wish people knew?
Turn off the TV and get outside.
That's one of the best answers I've ever gotten. Turn off and leave your phone inside as well.
Leave the phone here too,
Lovely. Yeah. That is absolutely lovely. Well, where can people connect with your work, Ernie?
My email address is on the website, natureintheclassroom.org. And I'm happy to help anybody that's got questions or concerns or wherever they're at in their journey, feel free to reach out.
All right. Well, I can't thank you enough. Thank you for joining the Conspiracy of Goodness podcast. I hope all the connections to goodness and wonder and progress and finding your own potential will carry you through your week, and you'll start finding all the joy that Ernesto and I have in discovering our passions and helping others with those great gifts that the universe has given us. Thanks, Ernie.